Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, live from the Star Worldwide Network studios, here are your hosts, Light Beer Chris Clements and Dark Money Sean Noble.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Light Beer Dark Money.
You are Sean Noble, and I'm Chris Clements.
That's right. And I'm the
Dark Money. We have some new graphics that everybody who watches our program or comes on is impressed by the professionalism of the production.
Yes, well, you can take zero credit.
We have zero credit for that. Has to do with our great producer Robin
and these beautiful studios.
Yes,
and Dave,
exactly.
And Star Worldwide Networks.
Star Worldwide, the founder of our feast.
Yes.
In some ways. So today we have a very special guest.
We do.
Who is with an organization that's very near and dear to my heart. Gave me my first job out of college, the Leadership Institute.
Wow.
And you know what my first job was?
Probably making Morton Blackwell's coffee.
No, I did not make Morton Blackwell's coffee. I was hired to be the director of the Salvatore Leadership Speakers Bureau. And this gentleman had given a bunch of money to start the Speakers Bureau, and I had to put it all together. And it was six, seven months of my life.
That's a pretty tall order.
I was there for a year.
Recent career.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
It was something else.
That's almost like running a congressional campaign while you're still in college.
It can be. You're dealing with a lot of egos, that's for sure. But Robert Arnakis, who's the senior director of domestic and international programs, is gracing us with our presence. Thanks, Robert. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
How are things at LI?
Very good. I became senior director as soon as I had more gray hair than I had brown hair. So yeah. I don't know if it's necessarily a function of my capabilities as much as the change in my hair color.
Well, the change in the hair color is directly related to Morton Blackwell's red pen, I think.
Yeah. The more red
because
you
if
see,
you have
the
to, if you have to bring something in to the founder of the Leadership Institute, Morton Blackwell, who was the youngest delegate at the 1964 Republican Convention for Barry Water, which he will tell you
every time.
But if you have to bring a project like a Speakers Bureau catalog to Morton Blackwell, you're invariably treated with corrections with the red pen.
Yeah, a sea of red ink.
Yes, and I think I had less hair back then. It didn't go gray, but for a 23-year-old kid, I think I lost my hair versus it turning gray. I believe I cried in front of him at least one time.
Well, because it was just so I will say this about Morton, and you two have worked for him, I haven't, but watching him from the outside for 30 years, he's a tough boss, but he is beloved.
Oh, yes.
I mean, the guy, and he's one of the most gracious people as far as bringing young people into the fold and mentoring them that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think that's correct. And we had a small group, and every single one of the people who worked for Morton at that time have gone on to do tremendous things.
Yeah.
One being Tom Fitton, who now heads up Judicial Watch.
Right.
Myself, I've had a pretty decent career here
and
there.
Illustrious career.
And a guy by the name of Dan Quiggle, who's been a lecturer at LI for a long time and does a lot of coaching and been part of the movement forever. So it's been, it's true. He trains up young conservatives in the right way, teaches you how to speak well, how to write well. Before I worked for Morton, I had no idea what the passive voice was,
right,
or the active voice. I had no idea how to write that way or how to talk that way.
Right.
I'll confess something to you now. I still have to use Grammarly to find out what an active voice is, but I'm getting less and less red on my paper with each time I run into Morton. So
that's good. What's so interesting is that I use it even with my wife. She was asking me to correct something yesterday for a little newsletter she was sending out. And I looked at it and I go, do you have a red pen? Because I need to look. This is too passive voices. She goes, what do you mean? I go, it's just,
If you're getting red mark on your pin and you haven't been thrown out of the office yet, that's an okay pass.
Oh, definitely.
Definitely.
When you're told to come back, rewrite it, then you need to reconsider.
You know, Shattuck was the same way. He required reading in the Shattuck office, other than How to Win an Election by his father, was Strunk and White.
Mm. Oh, wow. So that's, I mean,
the whole, you know, the grammar nerds. And I don't know that ever sunk in. I still, my wife is a grammar nerd.
Yeah.
And it's useful to have her.
When you come into the LI, most of the time you have, you know, some sort of liberal arts degree where you're used to using flowery language. Mm-hmm. And that's what Morton always says. Your poli-sci degree is really not worth the paper it's printed on, because exactly. All this flowery language doesn't communicate anything to somebody who might be writing to. And so when you had to construct like a donor letter, which I did several times, you know, the language is very concise. It's very direct. And you can't use words like that. You have to use which I'm assuming is still the case.
Yeah,
and the active voice must be primary. And exactly. I had no clue what that was. But yeah, but Morton was, but I learned a ton. And I think that's the legacy of the Leadership Institute, especially with kids, basically. I mean, they are kids coming through, and people will stay for a long time and then move on to other places in the movement. They will learn a tremendous amount, and they'll learn how to do things the right way.
Yeah. Robert, how did you end up at the Leadership Institute?
So interestingly enough, I was in college. I went to a small liberal arts private college in LA, and my cousin was going to school with me at the time. He got an internship out in DC with an organization called the Leadership Institute. Never had heard of them, but he spent a few months out there. In the meantime, I moved into his apartment over the summer. He came back and told me a little bit more about the Leadership Institute. Fast forward a few years later, I ended up moving out to DC, and I'm looking around for a job, and I came across the Leadership Institute. And it was at that point that I realized, this was the same Leadership Institute that my cousin had worked for. And as it turned out, my cousin's father had connections to Morton Blackwell. And so we were able to talk, and ended up interviewing and got hired. And that has been 18 years ago, as of just a couple days ago.
You are a unicorn, sir. You are a unicorn.
Are you the longest serving?
You've got to be.
On
staff? I'm in the top five there.
Wow.
So
okay.
There's a few of us that are been around a lot longer, but yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, and the Leadership Institute, you know, for people who don't know, I mean, is the leading organization for training conservatives, young conservatives primarily, but also candidates and people in media in conservative principles and how to win.
Right.
You know, you go to Leadership Institute to learn how to win. That's been the axiom for a very, very long time. And one of my things now, at this stage of life that I'm in, that if I have a candidate who comes to me and says, hey, you know, I really appreciate your help with the campaign, and my first question is, have you received training from the Leadership Institute? And if not, why not? Because most likely, if you've hired your big consultant and your big fundraiser, you're going to lose because you haven't done the work for yourself. And that's one thing LI teaches is on the campaign side.
Yeah.
And Chris, I should say this, I've been at LI for 18 years, but in addition to my work with LI, I've been able to work on political campaigns from presidential down to dog catcher races. And the one thing that has always came back to me is, you know, you work on these campaigns, and I know Sean, you've done this as a consultant, and there's not really a manual out there that teaches you what you need to do and how you need to do it. A lot of it's on the job training. That's been one of the great things the Leadership Institute, I think, for the candidates and campaign staff alike, is it kind of demystifies the process a little bit, gets you that experience that you need. So then when you're making judgment decisions on, you know, which consultant to hire or which, you know, direction to take from a strategy perspective, you have some insight into where you need to go.
Yep.
Well, but also you learn on the candidate side specifically and the grassroots political side, you learn why it is you're running. Like, you are forced to think about these things and to communicate them in a concise and measured manner, not just simply give the consultant talking points, when you're asked, well, why do you want to be congressman? Why do you want to be senator? And 30 minutes later, you're still waiting for the answer.
Yeah. One of the exciting things for us, I think, is just in the, there's been a lot of talk in the last few days about Myra Flores, congresswoman elect down in Southeast Texas.
Right.
She has attended two of our classes that we taught, candidate classes, and then also her campaign staff have attended it. And, you know, it's exciting for me to see those kind of people who were, you know, written off, the underdogs, if you will, to see how they've came around and taken that training and that experience and gone on. And I'm sure she'll do great things. But that's really what Morton's been about for 43 years now.
Yeah, I went to the 40th anniversary and his 80th birthday party there in D.C. a couple of years ago. And I, you know, saw some old friends. I just couldn't believe it. But that's sort of the axiom of the organization is that how many candidates can you count that they were written off? They don't have the money. They don't have, you know, whatever the it is. And they win. And they win because they do things in a way that inspires the grassroots, that inspires people to turn out for them. And they have clear, concise messaging. They stay on message. They don't waver from their principles. They have guiding principles.
Yeah.
Which we are seeing more and more in, you know, in especially party politics, just people who are running who have literally no guiding principles at all.
Well, I mean, if the Trump years exposed anything, it was that we've got a bunch of people who have fealty to a person and no core. And that might get Robert to the, you know, prior to the podcast, we were talking about what is it? What does it mean to be a Republican? What's the Republican Party look like? Where is it going? I mean, obviously, you get around the country, you talk to a lot of people. What do you see?
Yeah, I just this past week I was in Florida, then I ended up in Texas, and I was at the Texas Republican State Conference there. And
Cornyn got booed.
yes. I would suggest anyone, if you're ever in politics, you need to go to that convention and see it. It's like 12,000 people, you know, it's politics on steroids. But I was traveling around, and it's the question I've been asking my team and the question I've been asking our friends out there. What does it mean to be a conservative? And can you be a conservative in today's political climate? I think in many ways we're got caught up in a populist movement under Trump. And I wonder where we go, what the direction is. Are we good on foreign policy? Are we good on national defense? Religious freedom, those core tenets of what conservatism was. I'd be curious to see where you guys think we're still around and functioning, because it seems to me there's divides in all different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, the idea of what makes up a conservative or whatever. I mean, I come at it from an intellectual perspective. I mean, we're, you know, the core of the conservative movement to me has always been about what this podcast is about: faith, freedom, free enterprise. And those, without those three working together, that's sort of the winning coalition. And it's certainly the winning coalition of ideas that you saw with the ascendancy of Ronald Reagan. We have people in the state who are conservative, who believe that faith is the cornerstone of the country, that believe that freedom, personal responsibility, to be able to live their lives the way they want to live without government intervention or interference. And then free enterprise just builds off of that in terms of the capitalist system that we have that needs to be free of regulation and taxes and everything else. And that, as long as we keep those at the core and people understand that those are the core, we can win. But once we stray and we go around and people can't really communicate those principles at their core, they don't believe them. And you always know when somebody, a candidate, doesn't believe them, because they have no idea how to communicate.
Right, right. I feel like, you know, what is the role of the conservative movement today? Is there one? I think there is. And I think this is going to sound, maybe this is a little bit weird, but I think the January 6th commission hearings have actually done good work for the conservative movement, because it's showing people how unhinged Trump and his effort was to try to overturn or change the results of the election. Because it was, you know, they tried all these legal avenues that they didn't have any evidence for. And, you know, strong conservatives like Bill Barr, Attorney General Barr, who said this is bullshit. You know, I mean, you get to the point where it's like, I'm sorry, you didn't do what you needed to do during the election, but you lost. And Trump. And
Sean, you bring up a very good point. I mean, one of the alumni that we have for several years highlighted was Vice President Mike Pence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, just a couple of years ago, we had the honor of having him in our building, and he did an event for some of our youth. There's not too many organizations out there that can say that they have a relationship with a sitting vice president. And not only that, but he credits our founder of the organization for helping him in advancement of his career. So we like to highlight him. And just this past week, we highlighted him down in Florida at an event. And we had somebody confront us after the event and say, how could you? How could you? You know, and they equated him to a traitor. And it's just amazing to me when we look at these splits that are taking place in the post-Trump era. You know, you've certainly got the January 6th, which I think has magnified a lot of the factions. But you look at it from a fiscal standpoint, right? We used to be the party of fiscal sanity. We've lost that. We now are reckless spenders. We used to be the party of fiscal sanity, and we believed in capitalism, and we were against tariffs. We've lost that. And so you have these different issues that are weighing out there, and it's these splits of how we are supposed to govern as conservatives when we get elected. And, you know, I think we're going to have a tremendous November. I think this is going to be historic in many ways. But what does it mean to govern as a conservative? And I think that question is very divided. You see it there in Arizona. We see it across the nation.
Yeah, no question. And Sean, you said it quite well. I mean, is it a fealty to to principles that are at your core, or and some ideas that you can point to and beliefs that you've had for a long time, or is it fealty and obligation to a personality or a person? And I mean, on the faith side, the only fealty and dedication I have is to a guy who lived and died 2,000 years ago, and that's Jesus. Beyond that, you know, we're not called to put our faith in politicians.
Yeah.
I don't care who they are.
Right.
I don't care what they espouse.
Be disappointed.
Yeah, you'll always be disappointed. And so to watch this play out and to watch people, you know, what you were just talking about, Robert, you know, actually have this heart and this soul and this dedication to a person who is tremendously flawed, pursued some great things. I think intellectually we can all just sit back and talk about what Trump did from a policy standpoint, but I wouldn't necessarily give him credit for knowing exactly what those policies should be.
Absolutely not.
So, I mean, you mentioned Mike Pence. I've said on this podcast several times, Mike Pence saved the Republic.
Yeah.
And I think he's being tremendously vindicated by these January 6th hearings, along with Bill Barr and many other people who went to the president early on and said, you know, this what you're espousing and what you're thinking about doing, you know, is, to use Bill Barr's language, bullshit.
Right.
Yeah. I think we are in an interesting time, and none of this really gets decided until we have our 24 nominee, right? The healing process can't start until we have a clear path. Are we still working in the world of Trump being a nominee in 24, or is it going to be somebody else? And the interesting thing I'm sure you guys have been following is all these primaries. Here in Virginia, we just had our primary. And seeing the Trump endorsed candidates versus the other people. I think when you look at that, you lay it out at the end of this year, that's going to be real telltale as far as the direction that, you know, Trump and his machine takes. My guess is he doesn't run in 24, and you start to have other people pop up like a DeSantis in Florida. But you look at, you know, these issues that we're facing: religious freedom, domestic policy, national defense. I mean, we still got the war in Ukraine out there. We need leadership. We've got big issues facing this country. And, you know, I'm not sure if Trump's the guy that's going to unite the country.
Yeah. I mean, I often reflect or ruminate on this idea, like, how did we get here? Between a lot of the discontent that happened during the Obama years to Trump and now to Biden, it's been a mess for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's not to excuse some leadership failures with even George W. Bush and certainly Bill Clinton. But it just has been, and I think it's a character thing, and it's just been a mess for a while, and now the vitriol and the hatred, and I just don't like playing in that sandbox.
No, I don't think
regardless of what you think about Trump or what you think about Obama or what you think about Biden, these are people, families, whatever.
Here's been my message as I've gone around and I've worked with activists and candidates and things like that. We love to quote Ronald Reagan in the movement, and we need to develop our next Ronald Reagan, certainly. But one thing that I think was the key to Ronald Reagan is he came out of the Carter years. And the challenges that were in the Carter years are very similar to what I think we're going through in the Biden years, not only the economic inflation, but just everything else going on. We need, as a movement, conservatism, I think we need to have an optimistic message for people out there.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who are dissatisfied in both parties. And so how do we harness that fear, not to our advantage, but how do we become optimistic and say there are things we can do different as conservatives who will govern?
That's a great point. I think people want to feel like there's a path, that there's hope, that there's an ability to make things better.
Yeah.
And that somebody that says, look, you think about the resiliency of the American people. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. And the message from the left is you aren't capable of doing this. We have to help you.
Yeah.
You don't have the wherewithal to do this on your own. You need government help. And I think that's just falling flat. And I think people are starting to get very weary of the intervention of government in every aspect of our lives. I think, for better or for worse, well, for better. If we learn anything coming out of the COVID issue, the COVID stuff, it's that government doesn't have all the answers. I mean, think about it. It was private enterprise that got the vaccine to market fast because government got out of the way. Now, government funding helped, absolutely. I'm not going to dissuade that. But, the American people are very resilient. They've got a lot of great ideas, and we need to get them unshackled from government intervention.
There was an article in the Wall Street Journal, I think either today or yesterday, that made this point about the major shifts that are happening in elections across the globe, some good, some bad, but in terms of people being angry and fed up about what happened during the lockdowns, mm-hmm. and that the government has overstepped its bounds, and people want to be unshackled from a lot of what's happened.
Well,
and never go through it again.
And then
you have Biden yesterday saying, well, we need money for the government because there's going to be another pandemic.
Yeah.
Like he's been talking with President Xi about that, and maybe they've got something.
cooking up something in the lab.
Yeah, maybe cooking up something in the lab. We can't say that.
The thing that is, I think, where it really has the disconnect is that it's government is the only one that can, deal with this, but on the things the government should be dealing with, like immigration and border security, they are an abject failure.
Yeah.
And so you ask the question, how do we get here? I think Trump leaned in on the immigration issue, and I think that's what set him apart in the primaries of 2016, 15 and 16, and it clearly is what made the difference, I think, in the election against Hillary. And and then just his insanity of his personality as a president, as a sitting president, is why he lost to Biden. And now, as a result, we see this challenge on immigration has gotten worse and worse and worse. And I think, you know, we have to show that we have the ability to have a thoughtful strategy when it comes to immigration, because we want to follow Reagan's, you know, we are a shining city on a hill. People want to be here. So let's figure out a way to make this work, because our birth rate's going down. We're going to need workers, you know, whatever. But we've got to get control of the border. And I think that's one of the things that Biden is an abject failure on, opening the door for.
Sean, one of the interesting things to me, like post-pandemic, and I say that kind of with some latitude, but I think looking back, the government used the narrative that we are to be fearful. Hmm. We're to be fearful. We're to be fearful of our neighbors. We're to be fearful of our politicians. We're And we're all biblical here. We are not supposed to act in the spirit of timidity, right? Yeah. We're supposed to be bold. But part of that process is, in fearing people, we broke down our relationships with people, yep, with our neighbors, with
absolutely
our teachers. And so government is always happy to fill that void, right? Whatever that void may be. And that's really where I see it, that they've came in and they've caused fear, they've caused panic, they've caused people to not rationally think things through, and then they come in with answers. And don't spend too much time thinking about their answers, just be worried and be fearful,
right?
You know, and it's funny because your podcast, Light Beer, Dark Money, right? I mean, I'm sitting here right now. It's a little later DC time, but I've got my beer here.
Okay. It's beer 30 somewhere, right?
Yeah,
exactly. And in my local brewery, right? I mean, that was one of the things you enjoyed, is going down there and having a beer with people who you may not have been of like mind with, but there was some commonality there. And the things that you could discuss, you discuss, and you discuss rationally. And people were either good people or they're bad people,
yeah,
right? There wasn't gray area. But what you'd find out in conversations with people is there's a lot more good than bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're missing in today's society, is we're not willing to look at the good in people. We're not willing to look at their intentions versus their words. And you know this in politics. Our words, you know, we can be sharp-tongued at times. So I'm thinking, as we go along this process, how do we establish faith in the human nature again? And those are big questions, right? How do we get people to trust us as neighbors, as friends? And then how do we get that faith back in our institutions, right? And certainly that church, I think, plays a big part in the fabric of our country.
Yeah, that is the great question, because, you know, church attendance is lowest level ever. There's a lot of the faith in institutions is below anything we've ever seen before. There's just a lot of like you said, fear, but there's also doubt and we question motives.
Yeah.
It's messy, but I think you're right, Robert. We have to get back to understanding that generally, people are good, and we all have more that we can agree on than disagree.
Yeah.
When you look at the whole human experience.
Since we're talking about the faith issue, there's a great, I'm going to, you know, plug it. There's a great book out right now by a pastor down in Georgia named Andy Stanley, and it's called Not In It to Win It. And he calls out both conservative and liberal pastors for dividing people of faith.
Interesting.
This last election, that whether you're liberal or conservative, you have one founder of your faith, if you're a Jesus follower or a Christian, whatever you call yourself. And as long as you are seeking that founder, as long as you're seeking that person, the real Jesus, then you're not dividing. You're loving. You're accepting, trying to accept people for who they are. You might not agree with them. You might not agree with their life choices. You might not agree with a lot of things, but you're called to love.
Yeah.
And you're called to follow one person. And that's what we've lost. And to your point, I think it's a great. I mean, when you go to a sporting event, you're not looking around going, "Well, he's a leftist and he's a conservative and he's a Trumpy and he's a Biden supporter." You're not. You're enjoying the sports,
right?
Because and you're all there to enjoy whatever team you're rooting on or anything else. And it's that camaraderie, to your point, Robert, that we lost. We lost that common purpose of just accepting and treating people with respect, with honor, and with love. And we're getting it back. I do have faith in that, but it's taking a lot of time.
Yeah,
there's a lot of skepticism.
Well, right? And it's going to take a lot of work. So we all have to be a part of it. We have to be less divisive and more inclusive, and listen. We have to do more listening.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, the interesting thing about my work with Leadership Institute is I've been fortunate enough to teach people how to win and help them along the way for many years. But also, it's winning with grace.
Yeah.
And it's losing with grace, right? That is so key to, I think, where we're at as a country, right?
Well, you saw that in Alabama the other night, right?
Right.
It's how to lose without grace.
Yeah.
Right.
I was making comment to my family the other night when Mo Brooks was going off, and I said, just turn this guy off. This is not how you lose.
Well, you don't call people of your own party the bad guys.
No.
I mean, you really shouldn't call anybody the bad guys. But it's
so that's, I think that's, an interesting area where we're at. And I try to remind myself of that on a daily basis. And it's a challenge. But how do we treat people better, right? How do we treat people better so that we build trust, so we build relationships? I mean, just in my little community I'm looking outside, I live in a former prison. Interestingly enough, they call this place Liberty. It was a historic facility that held G. Gordon Liddy. It helped the suffragettes. Incredible history. It was FDR commissioned the prison because there was overcrowding in Washington, D.C. So this place has so much history, and there's so many people that have came in here from different areas, different backgrounds. And I think to myself often, just while I'm walking my dog, how can I build better relationships just in my little community,
yeah,
right? And then how do you extend beyond that? And I think that's one of the things that if we can focus on our neighborhoods, if we can focus on our cities and our towns, building back that sense of community will help us, I think, take back our country.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely agree.
Great point. That's a nice segue to
end our time together here. But where can our listeners find you?
So you can reach out to me at the Leadership Institute. My email is RARNAKIS at leadershipinstitute.org. You can get me on Twitter. I'm there mostly as a consumer these days, but it's at H2OPOLO12.
Nice.
And then obviously, if you ever want to go to Leadership Institute, our website is leadershipinstitute.org. And I'm reachable there as well.
Awesome.
And if you want to study and you want to learn how to win, and you're thinking about running for office, or you're thinking about getting involved in your grassroots campaigning or anything like that, just the boot camp of politics, if you're a young person, if you're in college, Leadership Institute is the best place to
learn.
Well
worth it. Absolutely.
And Chris, I should mention, we're going to be coming out to Arizona in August.
In August, August 13th at Grand Canyon University.
I always love to pick the hot times.
Yeah, right when they're getting back in. So we'll have some fun with that. Going to be doing a grassroots activism school.
Great.
For a day or two. So that's going to be great. Thank you for helping us put that together. And Robert, I really enjoyed working with you on a lot of different items over the last several years. And appreciate Morton tremendously for the lessons learned as a very young, impressionable, young man who didn't know how to write very well.
Well, he's still a leader, and
I still fear the red pen.
Yeah, thank you, Robert, for being here. We appreciate it.
John, Chris, thank you, appreciate it, and we will see you in August.
All right, okay. God bless you. Have a great summer.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.